This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.
Are you there, Sam?
Yep, hang on, I'm just turning that on.
Is our guest ready?
Yep, I've got the music ready.
Can you hear me okay?
Yep, sounds great.
Cool.
Otago Access Radio, in partnership with Otago Polytechnic, brings you Blowing Bubbles.
Blowing Bubbles brings you positive conversations with people in their bubbles around the world.
We're curious about how people are finding new ways of life, being and problem solving. Every Wednesday, the Sustainable Lens team of Samuel Mann and Mawera Karatai reach out from our bubbles to chat with interesting and positive people around the world.
Broadcast on Otago Access Radio, 105.4 FM in Dunedin, and streamed and podcast on oar.org.nz.
Bringing joy, connection, kindness and peace in all the days ahead.
Welcome to Blowing Bubbles for New Year's Eve. I'm Samuel Mann, and I'm joined by Mawera Karatai in Whakatane. New Year's in Whakatane. Did you get much holiday traffic?
We do a little bit, and we kind of start hoping for rain so they all go away. Because it does get busy, like, you know, through the rest of the year, you can go for a walk down Ohobi Beach and there's nobody else there. You might see one or two people, but the beach is your beach. And then in the summertime, of course, the beaches go crazy. But in a sense, I am thankful for them because they keep our regional economy alive and they keep the shops open and they support our lives here over the summer months. So I'm thankful for that.
So, New Year's Eve, we spent Christmas Eve looking backwards, so let's spend New Year's Eve looking forward.
That sounds exciting to me.
What's the big plan for you for 2026?
I've got such a cool life going right now, but there's that
You've
one...
You've got about five lives going right now, Mawera.
Yeah, I do have. I said to Jack when I came home from my recent trip to Dunedin, earlier in December, that I feel like I've got my Dunedin life and my Whakatane life, and I guess that will continue as I travel down to every couple of months. I'll be down in Dunedin now as I start kind of building my life there. And but I guess there's that big question around what's going to happen with the regional council. But the thing I'm most excited about this year, it's always professional and personal, is the book that you and I are writing around supervision and our particular model of supervision. I learned to be a good supervisor by being supervised by you. So writing this book is, you know, that's something that I've dreamed of since I was writing my doctorate work. And now it's becoming a thing, and I'm really proud of that, Sam.
Can you give people a sneak preview?
It's really, I guess, if I was going to put it into its most simplest form, is it's about heart-led and student-centered supervision. So actually really caring about our students, knowing who we are as supervisors and being clear about what we bring and our expectations of the relationship. Because especially when you're writing a doctorate thesis, the relationship is everything. You don't get to that level not being able to write. So we know that our students can write, but we also know that their lives are complex and there will be incredible complexity that they will have to navigate through over those 3 years. And it's the relationship that helps them to navigate that keeps them going when times get tough. And so our book is the field guide to that, managing the relationship. And establishing the relationship first and then managing it and caring our students all the way to the end.
I think an important part of that relationship is a genuine curiosity,
yes.
Finding everything interesting. I think that's as important as the heart-led, is that sparkly-eyed, this is interesting.
Yeah.
And
yes.
It might not be what the literature says is interesting, but if you're finding it interesting from your practice, or if there's the situation where there is the, you find yourself saying, well, the theory says this, but it doesn't work like that in practice, then that's interesting.
Yes.
If the project turns to custard, well, that's interesting.
And being willing to change direction, and that's interesting too. Like when you're ticking along and you think that this is a thing, and then you encounter this other thing and you go, oh, well, that's actually way more interesting. So we're going to head off down that path now. Being willing to do that, being fearless, and encouraging our students to be fearless so that they don't look back with regret. There's just so much power in that.
Indeed. And when it gets tough, actually talking about what unconditional positive regard means in practice.
Yes. Oh, do you know what we don't have? It's a chapter called Unconditional Positive Regard. I'm going to write that down right now. Thank you, Sam. I should have actually said that. Oh, that's so funny. Writing down unconditional positive regard. Oh my gosh, I can't believe I missed that completely. Didn't even think about that as a chapter title. What an egg.
Well, given that it was the intended title of your thesis at one point.
Yep. See, and being willing to pivot, eh?
We'll write that down.
Yes, being willing to pivot. But so also, many things.
But also, I think it's there in one of the later chapters, is the notion of being positively critical in a way that's mana enhancing.
Yes.
I think too often we slip into critical means negative.
Yeah.
And somehow we need to have a conversation about how you can actually lift in ways that actually are strengthening, and not by a strengthening by you've weathered all the blows, therefore you're stronger. I don't think that's and too often you see that in supervision, that it's I'm a real tough supervisor, and if you get through me, then you'll be really good. And for that and assessment, I just think that there's so many opportunities for us to talk about, I think Jacinda, she certainly talked about it, did she write about it, how you can be kind, but also have to make tough decisions.
Yeah.
And I think that's something which we need to get better at generally, and there's our opportunity for 2026. I'm going to get used to saying 2026. How long does it take you to stop writing 2025 on things?
I actually am terrible because I still write 2024. Time is moving too fast. And yeah, I'm not very good at that. I try and avoid the date.
I find on my birth date.
Do you put your birth year?
I put my actual birth year.
Same with me. It's terrible.
I just can't stop it.
No, I can't either. And actually anywhere around my birthday, in fact, it's just such a terrible thing. Anything I'm writing October, it's 71. Flimmin' annoying.
Let's take Duncan Disorderly and the Scallywags Smilin'.
Smiling is a real nice thing to do. Relax now, and get in your groove and let the cheeky little grin take right over you, because a cheek to cheek is how it should be. A cheeky little grin really working it for me, and well, we like to smile, it makes feel nice. I like to take my tea, sugar and my spice, so I can mix it up. I give in and I get, reminiscing about the moments I don't want to forget. Waking up to the morning dew, the sun be rising up right here, right now, for me and you. In the distance, the edge of the horizon, standing there, playing my guitar.
Year look like ahead for your work?
Well, my work, as you know, went through some interesting times. I was going to say late last year, but really it was all of last year. It dragged on and on and on. But it's hopefully all resolved. So while it's going to be challenging working under the new structures that have been put in place, that's fun. You have to work on the basis that this is fun. You could like this is a challenge. This is fun. If you go to work thinking this is impossible, can't possibly do this, then you're not going to achieve anything. So I'm working on the basis that it's doable and fun. And I think that in addition to the several books and things that are getting written. I think the challenge for me, what I'm really looking forward to this year, next year, still next year, what I'm looking forward to next year, I've got several learners coming through who are doing really interesting things in terms of how they are writing, not just writing their stories, but how they are using stories as the research method.
Perfect.
I've got people who are doing not just what Dave Gurridge did last year about retelling stories, creative retelling. That work's continuing. That work's got real legs. About how to engage in topics that are previously taboo or untold or just ignored by the literature, by organisations. How can we actually make use of that? So there's some real opportunity to do that. But also, I've got a couple of learners doing really interesting things. We wrote a paper a few years ago called Can My Thesis Be a Novel? And of course the answer is, yes, your thesis can be a novel, but it's really hard to pull off. Yep. The closest we've had so far is Dave Hursthaus's thesis, which he took the critical family settler history, I've got those words in the right order, where he explored his five times great-grandfather's work, who was the surveyor at Parry Harker and various other things, and aligned that with his own professional practice. And he did it unapologetically. The first chapter was an exploration, an imagined story, conversation between his six times great-grandparents, choosing to move to New Zealand, and the excitement that they had, and reading the books, the pamphlets that said the Maoris are now subdued and willing workers. And you know, that's a good place to go. And then the sort of the progression of that through the establishment of New Plymouth and the descent, rise into the Taranaki Wars and so on, and all the journey through that. And doing that in an unapologetic way of exploring his own professional practice was eye-opening for me. And then coming up in this year, I've got three people taking not a similar approach, but have been enabled by that that work that Dave did. We did some work last year, and that's continuing this year, on trying to map the structure of the thesis. And there's some really interesting patterns that we hadn't seen before, where there is a really strong relationship between the depth of professional becoming, which is the extent to which you really explore not just your own identity, but the what it takes to be in your profession, and the extent to which there is what we call the aesthetic disruption. So how different is the thesis from a 5-7 chapter normal thesis structure? And it works when those two things are aligned. So if you do a thing that's all sort of like poetic and got lots of pictures, but you don't really engage in that professional becoming or the ontological depth in another sense, then you end up with something that's pretty but doesn't go anywhere. And if you end up with something, we haven't had anybody successfully do that real depth of engaging in that professional identity in a standard PhD-like structure. I know PhDs can be different, but, you know, the standard sort of expectation, it doesn't really work. So the ones where it works are the ones where those sort of things are aligned about how far they're pushing out the boat in terms of the thinking about what does it mean to be a professional in their space, and pushing the limits of what's possible in the storytelling. That's where it's so cool. So I've got somebody telling doing a historical novel to explore sustainable practice.
Whoa.
So looking at mid-Victorian type, retelling a story from that in that time, and they're still doing sort of interviews with leaders in their field, but the barriers and things that those people are talking about are coming into the novel. So the thesis will be a novel. We're just trying to come to terms with the extent to which the exegetical bits, the bits which are the explanation bits, do they get put in footnotes, or do we somehow work those into the story? That's one that's also exciting, which is looking at a historical figure. Well, actually, an historical figure's wife, which is an interesting take, and telling the story through her perspective, trying to overcome that history, her story, kind of thing. And again, using that, in this case, that's to explore the impact of AI on education.
Yeah.
So if we go back into sort of Victorian times or pre-industrial revolution and look at the impact that it was having on this domestic life in the 1800s, what can we learn from that for how we should be thinking about AI, or can be thinking about AI? And I just think that sort of like multi-level storytelling is so exciting.
Ken, in the when you're introducing all of the theoretical stuff, which is really important, the theory is important, we've got to have the theory, can you just box it in, like just put it, like, because you don't want to disrupt the flow. You also don't want to be hunting for stuff in footnotes. Like, there must be some way to place it within the story. So, I mean, and it's probably not enough information that it can be a side by side. Is there like the left page is telling the story from a theory perspective and the right page is telling the story?
Yeah, well, that's one of the options. There's another option where you can build it directly into the story.
Right. But so, is that going to seem weird, like a change of language?
Well, not if it isn't a change of language. You don't need to mention Ferrer 1970. If you mention in your story that your character met at the pub a teacher from Brazil.
Oh, I love that, Sarah. That's so cool.
Then the people that know that that's Ferrer will know that that's Ferrer. And maybe you have a list of footnotes at the very end of the book that says, page 17, teacher from Brazil, obviously Ferrer.
Yeah.
So this week we're exploring those concepts. We're calling it diegetic referencing.
Wow, I love that. That's so cool.
So diegetic music is the music in the film
that
the characters can hear. So if the soundtrack is coming from the car radio and the characters are singing along to it, it's diegetic.
That's so cool. So kind of a bit like my Walking with Giants, having a conversation, building in the theory into the kōrero, but in a story form. I love that.
That's another thing that we are exploring is how do we do that? Because when we're trying to get people to write authentically and write poems and whatever else it might be, if you are exploring Ferrer in a poem, you don't want to be talking about the blue house on the hill, brackets, Ferrer 1970, because it destroys the poem.
Totally does.
So how do we do that better is one of the questions that we're exploring. Let's put another song on. Let's have a swimming song, because it's swimming season. Let's have Loudon Wainwright III, swimming song. Is your 2026 going to involve less jobs?
I can't see that happening.
I think it's fewer jobs.
That is, I can't see it happening. I mean, I like the way that this year has ended. I had managed to move some of my research over to a colleague, and then found out that I was successful in two other research project funding. So I think that my team is getting bigger, and I'm getting better at acknowledging that actually I can't do everything myself. And that it's okay to enable other people to work with me. And so, yeah, my team's going to grow in 2026, which I'm excited about. But who knows what will happen with the regional council, because that is, I mean, that's the thing that's kind of, I shouldn't say messing with my life, but it is messing with my life, because I didn't intend to get elected. That was a big accident. and it still shocks me. Think about it, but I never intended to get elected. All I wanted to do was talk about Māori wards at all the candidate events. So it's meant a huge change in my professional practice space. So a bit of work to do to figure all that out.
That enabling other people is another chapter for the book, or at least another area that we need to discuss in the book, and the nature of the collaborative relationship.
Yes.
Because I think that the sorts of supervision that we're talking about is a collaboration rather than a dictatorship.
Yep.
But also it recognises the fact that most work, most research isn't individual.
No.
And we need to somehow better talk about the fact that this work is done as a collaboration. And one of the people is claiming their contribution to that collaboration as their academic work.
And then if I think about that, like, you know, if you think postdoctorate, the amount of writing that you and I have done together, and also with Martin Andrew, who was my other supervisor, the writing that I've done with him, it set me up as the professional practitioner that I am. If you guys kept, you know, because it's really easy to get to the end of your doctorate, go through your defence and then go, I am never going to write another word. I am so over that. But what it takes is for someone to reframe what the next stage looks like. So you're not in that doctorate. So someone to pull you out of the doctorate mode and into what does the rest of my professional practice life look like, and start you in a new way of thinking and on a new journey. And that's what you so incredibly successfully did for me, which has set me up for my life, really.
Happy to help.
Thank you. There's more helping to do, Sam. I am not beyond help yet.
Well, maybe. So what you do need help with is how many jobs you are doing.
Yeah, but I've got people, so and I'm really happy as I look around me. I've got students, my own students, you know, writing their PhDs, who I've now got the opportunity for them to earn some money while they're studying, and I'm getting good at that. Like thinking about, oh well, I would love to do that research, but I know that I don't have time. But I've got this student who that's actually their research space, so they can have, you know, 10 hours a week and still have their scholarship, and have a little distraction, because I think we all need a little distraction.
Talking about little distraction, the accidental job that you do, the regional council, it's going to be quite distracted next year.
It is going to be, because we don't even know, you know, like this government has come in and said, oh, well, we're sacking all the regional councillors. So my big issue with that is actually not the sacking of the regional councillors. It's the a complete disregard of people's democratic rights to have the people that they voted for. And, you know, for every voter in this country who voted for their representation on the regional council, that sense of disappointment that your vote doesn't count, that the government can just come in and say, oh, well, we don't care that you voted, we're getting rid of this person anyway, that's not okay with me. It's really not. I feel sorry for, so I'm in this very weird position where I didn't intend to get elected and posted a $0 return. I didn't spend any money on anything and I didn't receive any money for anything. So I don't have any financial implications of losing my job. Whereas I know people who spent up to $20,000 to get elected based on, you know, this plan. They gave the people who have given up jobs. I've given up jobs. I've moved research over to other people and I can't just take that back. So there's all of these kind of the personal implications for people as well. And I just feel so sad and sorry for them. So you've got, it's a complex space, complex for the voters, complex for democracy, complex for the staff working in the regional councils who have got that job and security. Just like another announcement that was made by the government with their new Ministry of Meth, which is the Ministry for Environment, Transport and Housing. So we're calling that meth. And so the meth ministry. So, you know, like that, this new mega behemoth, ridiculous ministry where they have moved environment into growth. That is really, really, really scary. Yeah, so this government is just making bad decisions all over the place, and most of their decisions, including getting rid of the regional council and the councillors, are about taking away as many of the barriers to extraction-based economics as they possibly can. So we are going all the way back to the 1950s where people could come to Aotearoa, they could buy land, they could extract everything they wanted from it, leave a big mess and then go off back to their own country, and we've got the environmental catastrophe to deal with. That is where we're headed.
And they seem to be in a rush to do it. Presumably they know, well, they worried that they won't be there at the end of this year.
They are in a rush to do it, and the implications, like all the stuff that's happening at midnight under urgency, that we should be very concerned about that, and there's not nearly enough concern in the wider community about it. I think everyone's exhausted from change.
Let's take a music track. Let's have Sam and the Womp. Boom, boom.
I'm the cat with the bass and drum, going around like boom, boom, boom. And drum, going around like bum bum bum. What's grooving? I'm moving. I like your style of lumping. How charming, just a rapper. Load him up and eat that snapper. I was 16 pints of rum and then I go bum bum. Glowing up in the dark in the night, and so I go. Oh, I brought a pie in my pocket, pie in my pocket, and I am a singer. No got life, no got style, no got nothing on my mind, but I'm so cool and I'm so groovy. When I go bum bum bum.
when we let's laughingly call it planned what we were going to talk about today, as in a 10-second conversation, let's do the same as we did for Christmas Eve, but look forward instead. And we split that up into professional and personal, but it's really hard to ask a question about what are you hoping for? What's the biggest thing you're looking forward to on a personal level? Because you kind of don't know.
No, it's tricky, but we've got, we're really lucky. At the beginning of December, we got a letter to say that that Jack has progressed to the next level with his application to go to United World Colleges. So this has been a long-term goal of his. So if he gets accepted, he'll get to finish his schooling overseas. So his last 2 years of high school will be overseas. He'll come home with an international baccalaureate and a diploma in something, depending on which school he lands at. So we got a notification that his application has progressed. So I guess the big thing is that we go through that process and we just hope that he's going to be able to tick this goal off as well, and he'll go off overseas next year. And that is, you know, 2026 in either Canada or Norway, by the look of it, is just something super exciting. Like, I don't know, I think I'll regard that as one of my most important mumming things that I've done. Is supported him to that huge goal, because that's a big one, Sam.
For 2 years, that's ages.
I know it is. It's huge, eh? It's a really big deal. And I think about, you know, like we've had a few international students have come and stayed with us, and, you know, they come for 6 months and that feels like a long time away from their families. But this is like next level. But what they get from it is so huge. So he'll if he goes to Canada, he'll be on Vancouver Island. It's a real back to basics education of just maths, English, science, another language, and some sort of social science. So they do that at that international baccalaureate level, and then they also. So if he goes to Canada, he'll get a diploma in either marine science or climate science. If he goes to Norway, the diploma would be in Red Cross service. So, yeah, so it's like it's really massive. It's a huge commitment. They have to engage with the local community and run some sort of project. So it might be that he teaches mountain biking to the local kids, or he might start a Waste Zero network, or, you know, like that. He has to design and engage in some sort of project that he'll deliver over the 2 years. So it's really massive. It's a huge thing that he's going to undertake, and he'd be with kids from all over the world.
What an amazing opportunity. But
yeah,
then you'll have an empty house.
Yes, but I'll get more jobs. I'm going to need them. So me and the little dogs and the chickens and lots of jobs. But I just feel really proud to have journeyed alongside this boy of mine, and you know, like I've learned over time. My eldest son David, who's 36, says that he wishes he could have had the mum that Jack has, but Jack only has the mum he has because I was David's mum, and I learned a lot about mumming from my big son, and I've got better at it as time has gone on, that's for sure. I think my big thing for this year, Sam, is just be the best mum that I can be.
Be the best mum. That sounds like a plan.
Yeah, that's something that's in my control. Yeah. It's just do my best to be a really good mum.
Be the best dad and granddad, grandma.
Yeah, you're so lucky that you're a granddad. Oh, my goodness. I'm not really prone to jealousy, but I am of that one. I just can't wait to have grandchildren one day. Cannot wait.
And you've reminded me, just switching back to work for a tick, you've reminded me that one of my goals for next year is to make significant progress on bringing back the Bachelor of Leadership for Change.
I'm very happy to hear that, because that is a beautiful qualification.
And it's, you know, by design, a similar effect to this, you know, what Jack's doing, that in Vancouver or Norway, that working out how to make the world a better place and then doing that as your education, not after your education.
Exactly. I think that Bachelor of Leadership for Change was before its time. I mean, but that's pretty normal for Capable. Capable is often the leader in the before its time. And I think that now there's a better understanding of why it matters so much, especially given what we've had to endure with our current government. Sorry to go back to the government, but that's, you know, on my mind at the moment. That leadership for change is going to be just so vitally important.
Although I think that we're going to call it the Bachelor of Professional Practice.
Oh, perfect.
Which we should have done, I think, originally. We kind of didn't because, partly because how can they have a professional practice before they've got a professional practice? But I think this is about defining their professional practice. I think the trouble with a Bachelor of Leadership for Change, twofold. One is that it attracted, which was fantastic that it did, it attracted the hippies.
Yes.
And it was like, that was just so awesome that it did, but it kind of didn't attract the other sort of change makers. But conversely, leadership was seen by too many as a euphemism for management, which is seen as a euphemism for business, which is seen as a euphemism for accounting.
Extraction-based economics.
Yeah, and so it's sort of like found that name ended up in a strange place. And I think I'm hoping that Bachelor of Professional Practice is a better framing for it, even though it's actually the same stuff. And I still hope that we get the hippies because they were so amazing in terms of their change and influence on the environment and influence on the community. Let's squeeze in one more song. Let's have Jim Wigmore, Written in the Water.
Telling me that I should leave you like I did two times.
At this point, I would normally say I've got some questions to end the show. But I think we've done all those so many times.
You have done them so many times. How many episodes have we done of this podcast now?
582.
Oh my gosh, that is so huge.
582. Actually, we've done more than that. Not quite up to 400 because we recorded your students.
Yeah.
So we've got some shows to run out. This one is 582.
Amazing. So proud of that.
So we'll go well past 500 in 2026, probably 550.
Amazing.
Up to 600 in 2027.
I love that. This is the podcast that was gonna not get to 50. That's so good. Thank you, Kobe.
All righty. Let's call that done. Let's call that the end of 2025. Seem already confusing the years. Let's call that the end of 2025, and we're looking forward to 2026.
Yep. Thank you, everybody, for sharing the year with us and for supporting the podcast and for just being curious and wanting to be engaged. Kia ora.
Kia ora. Let's go out to the Zootons with Family.
Myself, and I look across the water, and I think of all the things, what you do, and in my head I make a picture, 'cause since I've come on home, well my body's been a mess, and I miss your ginger hair, and the way
to Blowing Bubbles, positive conversations with people in their bubbles, their safe spaces around the world. Brought to you by the Sustainable Lens team, which is brought to you by Otago Polytechnic and the University of Otago. We didn't have a contribution today from Tony McKenzie, but she'll be back next year. We're broadcast on Otago Access Radio every Wednesday afternoon at 3 and streamed and podcast on oar.org.nz. With the Wirrakarra time, I'm Samuel Mann. That was Blowing Bubbles. We hope you enjoyed the show. Happy New Year.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On Air.